Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes throughout the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. And from an article in Forbes.com by Lauren Sherman, what are the worst cities for credit card debt? Miamians owe more to credit card companies than anyone in the U.S. Gone are the days when Americans didn't think twice about splurging on a second pair of Italian-made leather brogues, a flat-screen TV for the bathroom, or a new made-to-measure suit for the office. A new bill passed by the Senate on May 19th, which is designed to tighten rules on credit card interest rates, might keep consumers from letting their spending get out of control again. But one could argue that such measures are unnecessary, as we're throwing down the charge cards less and less these days anyway. In March 2009, outstanding consumer debt fell by $11.1 billion to $2.55 trillion, according to the Federal Reserve. Revolving debt in particular, which consists mostly of credit card debt, fell for the sixth month in a row by $5.4 billion to $945.9 billion. However, some Americans don't seem to understand the errors of their past ways. The nation is still deeply indebted to credit card companies, and that isn't changing anytime soon. People are tightening their belts temporarily, says Terrence Darrell Schulman, an addiction expert and founder of the Schulman Center for Compulsive Theft and Spending. But he continued, "I'm not convinced that they're cured." Consider the residents of Miami, Florida. The metropolis has fully felt the effects of the real estate crash, including a 12% decrease in hotel occupancy for the first quarter of 2009, an increase in unemployment to 8.5% in March 2009, and a 9% year-over-year increase in foreclosures for April 2009. Yet, on average, Miamians owe more of their personal income to credit card companies than those in any other area of the United States. While the median household income in Miami is a moderate $43,333, while the national average is $50,233, average credit card debt in each home is $9,797. That means to pay off outstanding credit card bills, debtors would have to forego 22.61% of their incomes. Other areas where Americans continue to spend far more than they earn include Tampa, Florida, where the average household owes 17.1% of its total income, Los Angeles, where it's 16.81% of total income, Jacksonville, Florida, which owes 16.38% on the average, and Orlando, Florida, indebted by 16.37% of the total income. To determine where Americans are still overspending, the writer turned to Atlanta, Georgia-based Equifax, one of the three largest consumer credit reporting agencies in the country. From its database, Equifax determined total credit card debt in each of the 50 largest metropolitan statistical areas and metropolitan divisions from the first quarter of 2009. The writer found the average credit card debt per home by dividing the number of households in each metro area, determined by the U.S. Census Bureau, by the overall debt of the area. As a footnote, metro areas are defined by the U.S. Office of Management and Budget and are used by federal agencies in collecting, tabulating, and publishing federal statistics. Finally, the writer divided each metro area's average debt per household by May 2009 median household income, determined by Moody's Economy.com, an independent provider of economic analysis and data. This last calculation gave the average percentage of household income owed to credit card companies in each area. While most places on the list aren't too surprising, Las Vegas's housing crash and dismal tourism numbers, down by 8% in the second quarter of 2008, showing residents still spending and digging deeper holes, and Riverside, California's dreary unemployment and foreclosure rates, keep the debt-to-income ratio high. There are, however, some more presumably stable spots that make the list. For example, Austin, Texas, reports a low cost of living, cost of housing, and unemployment rate, but on average, households owe 14.12% of their overall income to credit card companies. The same goes for affordable spots like Indianapolis, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Cleveland, Ohio, where the percentage of indebted household income is 16.63%, 14.33%, and 14.45%, respectively. While Austin is fortunate in that its unemployment rate is still fairly low, only 5.5%, the other places have high unemployment rates, which means despite the fact that the cost of living is moderate, residents are still having to charge more than they should. For example, in Charlotte, North Carolina, the March 2009 unemployment rate was 11.4%, which is up from 5.2% in March 2008. As the headquarters for Bank of America, the city was particularly hit hard by the financial collapse. In both Cleveland and Indianapolis, the unemployment rate is 8.7%, which is 0.3% below the national average, but still 4.7% higher than what's considered economically healthy by economists. Regardless of what is or isn't driving our spending, it comes down to this: Americans are still heavily indebted to creditors. While consumers have cut back, they are still spending more than they should. However, Martin Lindstrom, a retail marketing expert and author of Biology, Truth and Lies About What We Buy, argues that Americans will never again conspicuously consume like they have in the past. This recession has created a slap on the chin or wake-up call so dramatic that I don't think people will forget this for years, he says. These kinds of catastrophes alter your behavior for the rest of your life and often without your conscious influence. Whether or not Lindstrom is right remains to be seen, but for now, many Americans are still overspending by a long shot. And that was from ABC News Internet Ventures. And from a New York Times editorial on foreclosures, no end in sight, a continuing steep drop in home prices combined with the rising unemployment is powering a new wave of foreclosures. Unfortunately, there's little evidence so far that the Obama administration's anti-foreclosure plan will be able to stop it. One of the biggest problems is that the plan focuses almost entirely on lowering monthly payments, but overly onerous payments are only part of the problem. For 15.4 million underwater borrowers, those who owe more on their mortgages than their homes are worth, a lack of home equity puts them at risk of default, even if their monthly payments have been reduced. They have no cushion to fall back on in the event of setback, like job loss or illness. There will be no recovery until there is a halt in the relentless rise in foreclosures. Foreclosures threaten millions of families with financial ruin. By driving prices down, they sap the wealth of all homeowners. They exacerbate bank losses, putting pressure on the still fragile financial system. Lower monthly payments are a balm, but they are no substitute for home equity. And until more Americans can find a good job and a steady paycheck, the number of foreclosures will continue to rise. In previous housing bursts, foreclosures continued to rise until prices finally bottomed. And prices will fall, and the foreclosures rise for some time. There is no end in sight. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now let's move on to the second part of the show, where we can look at ways for you to take control of your situation and help with debt problems, giving you some tools to be more comfortable. I start with an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in this series of shows are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. Also, you can go back and listen to all of the shows that are in the archives of www.kruufm.com in the section called Life and Debt to listen to all of the educational shows from the past. Recently, we have been discussing financial CPR, which is a way to deal with things when they get tough. It is your emergency backup plan, and we discuss how to spot the dangers, making a list of the wants that you could cut if you needed to financially. The third step would be make a list of the bare necessities or must-haves you could cut if the financial challenges were great, and how to practice every year and before any major purchase. And this was just a practice drill of CPR for finances. And when put all together, this is a form of dealing with a potential crisis in your financial life, presuming that everything has been stable. So what happens when bad things do occur and it's not really any time for pre-preparation for the formulas and for the practice, and it's no time for a drill that you have a real financial emergency? Let's say you've been following the show and you had created your security fund, but you've basically run through that and the money is getting tight. Well, what should you do? Of course, as in all financial situations, things will get tough, but you can get some tools to stay calm and keep you in charge of your future. As I mentioned last week, I gave an overview of the 7 points, and I'll go into more detail with each of these points, but just as an overview, Number one, we stay in control. Number two, we react quickly. Number three, you call your creditors. Number four, you pay the bills that matter most. Number five, borrow only as a last resort and keep it safe. Number six, negotiate like crazy, actually. And number seven, if push comes to shove, call a bankruptcy attorney. So let's talk about point number one, stay in control. It's really important that you don't panic, because when you panic, you can't do the things that will most help you. And in a financial life, panic can happen anytime. That pink slip may leave you pacing the floor all night. Collection notice may leave you speechless. A small claim lawsuit for a credit card debt you haven't been able to pay. So now you're up against a wall. But your response to that is basically that no matter how bad things get, I always have options. Again, no matter how bad things get, I always have options. In order to weigh your options, of course, you have to have a clear head. And when you are panicking, that is not the situation. You need to keep your wits about you so you can weigh your options carefully. When you understand that if you are in financial trouble, you can still have control, then you are in much better posture to deal with the problems. Of course, creditors have rights, and they have certain kinds of strategies for approaching the collection of their debt. But remember that you also have rights. And it is important to remember that you are the one who is earning the money, and you have control over the bank account, the house, and everything else which is in your name. In sum, this means that you are the one who decides which creditors get paid. You are the one who decides whether to sell something, to give it back, or to work out a payment plan. These are your decisions. You are still in the driver's seat. Keeping calm keeps you in control. Of course, you may be forced to make some very tough choices, but these are still your choices. If you keep your head, you can get through this. So it's very important that you stay in control. Point number two is react quickly. The corollary to don't panic is basically move fast. When something goes wrong, you need to create a plan and you need to do it quickly, which of course is why we had you practicing the financial CPR drill in this program. And just like when someone starts choking, for example, the time it takes to respond can make a huge difference. Now, it may seem obvious that you need a quick response, but in fact, and in my experience, most people delay. It's a very typical way for people to deal with the emotional stress involved in financial matters. The biggest problem and greatest danger when you get into financial trouble is frankly not the bill collectors. They can be very annoying and they can be harassing you, but that's not really the greatest problem. The greatest problem, the greatest danger is misplaced optimism. People hear it over and over again. I'm sure I can find another job right away. He'll be feeling better soon. We will patch it up after we spend a little time apart. In fact, many job counselors tell people who have lost their jobs to keep up their lives just as before, hit the credit cards, and keep everything normal. Well, things aren't normal when one is in this kind of dilemma. The speed with which you react may make the difference between a fender bender and a head-on collision. If a crisis comes your way, the first thing you need to do is to trim the spending. Go back to what we spoke about in the past, your CPR drill, hopefully you took notes and have been practicing, and look at the list of cuts you decided you could make if you had to. First from the wants and then from the bare necessities. Well, when the crisis comes, now is the time to start cutting fast. For example, if there's rumors of pink slips flying around the office, that's the time to eat dinner at home and cancel the cell phone. And the principal reason for cutting spending, for example, if you lost your job, it makes it obvious that you have to make sure you have enough money to pay your bare necessities, food, your rent or mortgage, transportation, etc. And if the bad news is still only in a rumor phase, then it's time to really fatten up the security fund we've discussed a little bit more. It's a good time to stop investing in your retirement fund, which is savings, or putting extra payments into the mortgage, which you may have been doing. You can resume these things just as soon as the crisis passes. It's true that you instinctively or intuitively know all this already. You wouldn't open an IRA or go on a shopping spree the day before you lost your job. But what's important is that you take time to think about this now so you'll be ready to react more quickly if the need ever comes. A particularly important point is to give yourself a timeline in a crisis. Since you don't really know when the crisis will end, you should create a schedule for yourself. So for example, you might decide that if you haven't found a job because you lost one within 3 months, it will be time to move to a smaller place to think about that and take a part-time kind of job like waiting on tables on the weekends until you find a job, which is a full-time job which you'll be pursuing during the week. The important thing is to be proactive. so that you can stay in charge of your life. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And we're talking about what to do in times of financial crisis, and just went over 2 points, staying in control and reacting quickly as very basic tools to deal with the crisis. Another point is to call your creditors quickly. When people are in trouble, when you know you'll miss a payment, get on the phone before you even miss the payment. When we think of doing this, we generally have a great amount of fears and believe that we'll get into some kind of fight with the creditor. But many people do find that if they call and they're polite, that the company tries to work out a plan with the caller to deal with the debt. So in short, get on the phone. It may be embarrassing. Your creditors will be much more willing to work something out if you call them before they have to call you. Just politely explain what happened. You've lost your job, you got sick, you were in an accident, and tell them sincerely that you want to make good on the debt. And some creditors, for example, like student loan issuers or utility companies, do have special provisions to accommodate people who are facing a serious illness, a job loss, those kinds of things, but you have to ask, so be sure to ask. You're much less likely to get hammered with late fees and collection notices if you make the call first. Ask your creditors if they will work out a repayment plan for you, perhaps just a token payment for a few months until you get back on your feet. But it's really important also to keep a record of whatever you agree upon. You may need that later on. But there is a very, very important rule. Don't agree to anything unless you are absolutely certain that you can meet your end of the deal. So if you're out of work and you don't have a regular job, just tell them what is wrong and that you'll try to work out a plan as soon as you can. In those circumstances, don't commit to anything. It's really important to be completely honest and never make promises that you cannot keep. So that's point number three. Call the creditors. Point number four is pay the bills that matter most. In other words, to prioritize your bills. If things get really, really tight and you don't have enough to cover all your expenses, then pay the most important bills first. For most people, obviously, the home comes first, place where you live, and then maybe the car or the health insurance policy. But you have to sit down and figure out your priorities. Of course, you want to pay everything, but this is a little like deciding what to save in a fire. Save the most important things first, then save what you can. Don't try to save everything at once because it is just too much to handle. What happens with many people is they try to juggle and they juggle back and forth. It doesn't matter if it's a secured loan, an unsecured loan. It's whoever is calling them and harassing them as a creditor or a collection agent. And there's really no thought behind both what is the best route for them personally, or there's no understanding of the legalities involved in those kinds of circumstances. It's just a knee-jerk reaction to what's ever coming into the communication pike for them from the debt collector. So what a person has to do is put all the expenses on paper and start making a list of priorities. For example, you may have a priority to have a house, but you can't afford the one that you're in. So that would be a downsizing kind of step. Still owning a home, but not the one that you've been paying. So that priority list is very, very important. And then having that priority list in perspective is also important with respect to the actual cost of those things on your list. In short, you need to make a payment plan that makes sense for you and not just be reactive to the particularly noisy creditors, who want you to send them some money just to get them to leave you alone. The truth of the matter is it doesn't matter who makes what demands or what the bills are or what the bill collectors demand. When serious trouble comes your way, you should be fighting for the things you care about, not trying to quiet down the most aggressive bill collector. In short, again, you have to pay the bills that matter most. The things that you treasure most will be the bills you need to pay first. The fifth point is that you borrow only as a last resort and that you keep it safe. When a person's in a crisis, they've cut out all of their fun spending money, their wants money, and have drained their security fund, and yet the crisis makes it so that there still isn't enough. Well, what do you do then? Generally, we want to keep away from borrowing more money. But if you don't have enough money to keep food on the table or to get medical care or to keep the utilities going, then you're going to have to go ahead and borrow money. You'll have to go into debt, but you have to do it carefully. The first rule of borrowing is to make absolutely certain that there is no other way to deal with the problem. Maybe you could earn a little more cash instead. Is there something still in the piggy bank? Look to see if you have exhausted every possible reserve. If you haven't, then don't borrow any money yet. Borrowing costs us big time in the future, so basically you only go that direction when you are sure that there is no other option. And the second rule is that you borrow for the bare necessities only. From what we've discussed in the past, you should already know this. You're not going to borrow money to take a trip to escape all of the stress, but I'm repeating it because I want to make it really doubly clear. Once you start down the slippery slope of debt, it can be so easy to just put any old thing on the credit card. Christmas is coming and I don't want to disappoint the family. The television's on the blink and this is such a great deal. But remember, these are not bare necessities. Take on new debt for housing, medical care, and food, and that's about it. And the third rule is safety is more important than interest rates. People often do this. They go into the home equity loan or car title loan, which seems attractive since the interest rate is lower and the advertisements are coming in fast and thick. But as I've discussed before, the last thing you should do when you get in trouble is put your treasures on the line. After all, it will be tough enough to keep up with your mortgage and your car loan, so you shouldn't make the payments even bigger when you are staring at trouble. In fact, a large number of the foreclosures that we see nowadays aren't by first-time homeowners. They're by people who took out loans on the equity for their homes when they had other options, but this seemed the best economic option at the time. At least that's what they were told. Now, what are some things you should do? Well, start by stringing out your payments. Request a deferment on your student loans if you have student loans. Hold off on paying the cell phone, the dentist, the doctor, and other outstanding bills for anything besides your utilities, your home, and your car payment. You'll get some dings on your credit report, and your cell phone may be shut off, but these creditors probably won't charge you exorbitant interest, especially if you had called ahead of time, and they won't kick you out in the street. We will continue next week with borrowing only as a last resort and keeping it safe. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.